Blog Talk Radio.
I do have to make you laugh here a little bit. Any thoughts of going to Monroe, New Jersey on June 1st to see Vince Russo do his U-shoot live?
Yeah, sure. Well, I think it's funny. Vince Russo is doing booking seminars, and I'm doing mindless high spot seminars.
Judy Bagwell on a poll. How can you make this happen for your promotion?
The first person that pays for that is I saw the the advertisement, and I thought, yeah, okay, good. If Vince Russo is holding a booking seminar near you, be sure to find something else to do.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on major pro wrestling and MMA promotions, the occasional history lesson, and interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap.
Good evening again, everyone, wherever you are. Wednesday, March 21st, 2012, 8 p.m. on the East Coast, and this is Ringside Wrap. I am Mike Sempervivi, joined, as I am every week, by the legendary Les Thatcher, as Rich Tate hides out in the studio somewhere and creates openings such as that. And I got a big show tonight. Had a great run of guests as it is, and then even better tonight with Ring of Honor announcer Kevin Kelly joining us at about 8:30. To talk about all the events that they have coming up down in Florida on WrestleMania weekend. And also going to have an interview that Jonathan Williams, who does the Wrestling with Pop Culture broadcast on Mondays here in the network, and also has his blog as well as WrestlingWithPopCulture.com. The interview he did with WWE Champion Daniel Bryan, and we're going to be airing that at about 9 o'clock or so after we get off the line with Kevin and we go to a break. We'll be coming back with that. But lots of things going on in wrestling this week. And Les, how are you doing this evening?
I'm going to bed. You don't need me. the important thing is ask Rich if that lead-in music was Booker T and the MGs or Dave Baby Cortez. That's really the most important thing on my mind right now. You still there, Super
Les? I don't know. I can't hear Les at all, Rich. I don't know if you can hear him or not, or if anybody's having problems hearing me.
I can hear you.
See, I can hear you faintly say that you can hear me. Rich Tate, what is going on with these levels, sir?
Oh, Rich. You're going to smoke anything, Rich. Smoke the real stuff. Don't use the synthetic stuff.
And a perfect time for the volume to shoot back up again. See, he was fading out there, Les.
Both of you are alive and hot.
I'm hot, baby. Whether I'm alive or not, it's questionable.
Let's try this again. Mr. Thatcher, how are you?
I can't hear you now, Mike. Jesus, Rich, if you can't join in and do this, I don't know. What? We'll get Kevin Dunn to produce this show. That'll get it right.
Oh, no. Oh, you hear him pop back on for that? That struck a nerve.
I'm doing okay, Mike. We've set a heat record in this city every day this week so far.
Oh, fuck. Have you really?
Yeah, and not just by a couple degrees, but like 20, 22 degrees, 25 degrees. I mean, it's just we've been in the low 80s for the last 3 days. And normally it's like 55, 56 here this time of year.
You know, come opening day, it'll end up snowing or something like that.
You know, I've seen snow on the ground. I mean, not a huge amount, but maybe, you know, half an inch or something here on the ground on opening day before. It's not unheard of. That's for a fact.
I remember there was one year, Memorial Stadium, that's how far back this goes. It was the Orioles and Mike Boddicker, I think it was pitching. That's how far back this goes. And it was probably 87 or so where he took the mound, and in the matter of an hour, there was rain, there was snow, there was sunlight, and then there was like a plague of locusts or something else had happened too that day, where I think if that's probably the year they started 0-21, that was probably a sign of things to come.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, we had when the last year that I had developmental here, that was 0-2, we were in the opening day parade. We had a car in the opening day parade, and Benoit came in to do it with us. And we had to wear heavy, you know, in a convertible, we had to wear heavy coats. It was that cool. Funny thing was, you know, Cincinnati's the first Major League Baseball team. So it's tradition is amazing here. And as we're riding through down the parade route, Chris leaned over. He said, "Does anybody ever work or go to school in this town?" You know, because I mean, thousands of people out, you know, for the parade, and legitimately, you know, here, if you have an opening day ticket and you're in school, grade school or high school, you take that ticket and show it to your teacher, you get an excused absence on opening day.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
That is awesome.
But yeah, it's been cool enough. I've seen it in the 40s here, opening day before. But yeah, it's been in the 80s, I don't know what, you know. Our summer, July and August here is pretty humid anyway. If this is a start of something, I don't know what it's going to be by that time. I don't know. But anyway.
Well, see, funny you brought up developmental. And I got to ask you, because I didn't get a chance to hear, only heard about half of the show so far from Wrestling Weekly on Saturday. So I didn't get a chance to hear you get into the developmental thing. Now, I know some things have taken place since then with, it, you know, is it going to close down? No, we're keeping it open. No, did Meltzer lie? All that, all of this stuff going on right now with Vince Russo offering his services for people for booking seminars. Are you going to use the Rolodex and give a call to Stanford and ask if you, you know, ask them if they want you to give them some sort of seminar as far as developmental goes? Because
wow. No, you know, somebody on Facebook posted, I hope WWE's got Les Thatcher on speed dial. I thought, boy, that'll keep him away from me if nothing else. No, listen, nobody's going to call me. Do I feel like I could do a good job? I absolutely do, Mike. But I'm not a yes man. I don't know how to play politics. I will work my rear end off for anybody that hires me. I've always been that way in the business, and I will give my all. But I only give my all when I'm allowed to give my all, not somebody else's all. I've gone through this conversation for God, I don't know how long now. It's, you know, moving to Stanford is not the answer. Then I read on another site today that the thought might be that they would bring guys up there to work with Kevin Dunn and creative. I thought, boy, that's a step in the wrong direction.
Ooh. Ooh.
I mean, it is. Here, very, very briefly, a quick Reader's Digest coverage of this. Here's my question. How did Paul Levesque morph into Terra Rising, into Triple H that we're about to see help steal the show in 2 weeks at WrestleMania? He developed that way. I mean, we all had help. Everybody. I mean, everyone talks to you and critiques you. I mean, when I say that, you know, we've all been. But the point is to be allowed to find out his own levels of whatever, to find out his strong points, his weak points, to be allowed to make mistakes. No one sat down and wrote out a character called Triple H or Terror Rising or any friggin' thing else. Was he a great, great worker when he went into WCW? No. But he developed, and he was allowed to develop by working with better talents. That's the only way. You know, God, I get so bored with chewing this hash. But that's you know, first of all, these guys need to all be allowed to learn to work. That's the operative word, work. Not entertain, not be stupid, but to work. And that's what I teach. Now, then when they actually accomplish that, now you can start, you know, talking about characterizations and personalities and gimmicks and hand signals and catchphrases and good music and costuming. All that is of no value. Well, they've got a bunch of guys who wave their arms and dance around pyro and grab their crotches, and they have pretty kick pads and, you know, but can they draw money? No. And Vince is, you know, somebody said Vince had gone on a rant about he didn't have anybody to draw. He's right. He doesn't. But the blame cannot be laid at the feet of Tommy Pritchard or Ricky Steamboat. They are doing what they are paid to do. And the point is they should be allowed to – I've worked with both these guys, and I will defend them to the death that they both understand talent. They both know how to train talent. But they both are doing what they're paid to do, which is actually not do what I just said they can do. And the thing with the kids down there, well, they're all, you know, it's like an assembly line. They're all alike. Well, there's a reason for that, because they're only allowed to work with one another, you know. And at some point, that is stifling within itself. Very, you know, here you need more than one territory. I disagree with Meltzer. I think Lance Storms is a good trainer. I don't know that I'd want to necessarily put something in Canada though. But maybe Lance wouldn't want to come back here. I don't know. That's the judgment in my case is out on that still. But they need more than one place. They need to be able to move the kids around. They need to continue to put some of the talent from the main roster, like I had with D'Lo and Val Venus and Haku and. On and on, you know, I always had three or four of those guys here, which not only worked with them in training, and DeMont was here for a while, but they also worked the shows with them. So they worked. I learned, Steamboat learned, Pritchard learned, God learned, everybody learned by working with guys better than him. So that's the only way these guys are going to get better. And they actually have to learn to work before they learn to be entertainers.
Well, how many terror? I mean, six would be fantastic with a working relationship with Japan, because, and we'll probably get to this at some point, you know, who comes back? Prince Albert, the hip hop hippo. He was this, he was that. He goes to Japan and he's treated with respect like a big killer guy should be. And look who's back, you know, with all those guys that they have on the. You know, in FCW and all these guys that they have, they bring back a guy who actually knows how to work and who's been around for a while. It's amazing they do something like that, you know, and don't realize the mistakes that they make, or they just decide to blow them off. But if Rick Bassman, I obviously Jim Cornette, the bald-headed stooge or whatever he would call him, but when he had developmental, when you and Jim Cornette were part of it, and Dory Funk was getting a lot more use as far as trying guys out and things like that for them. You know, obviously Bassman did what he did, but was there a place for that? And do they need six unique territories, basically, where, you know, Colt Cabana and Chris Jericho, these guys who do improv, Trish Stratus, you know, instead of working in Connecticut as far as with those guys, I mean, isn't it better to use like an L.A. territory to use improv schools and things like that? And how many places do you think, you know, would be how many places do effective?
Well, you know, here's the thing. The company is so micro. We, at one point, talked to Fox Sports Ohio, right, Mm-hmm. There was the possibility. Now, when I first came on board, you want to get as many talent, you know, one of the guys came down, I forget, some of the executives, you know, let's try to get at least 16 shows a month. When they didn't renew me, I had 16 shows a month, including my televisions. But the point was we could have, you know, maybe gotten some more. But anyway, if you talk to Fox Ohio, right, about possibly getting on Fox Ohio on Friday nights. And in doing that, Fox Ohio also bleeds down into Kentucky, which for those who don't know the geography is right across the river from Cincinnati. The state line is the Ohio River. And so anyway, I'd already talked to Danny and Jimmy that if indeed we got on, that any place where that Fox Ohio thing popped into OVW land, all they had to do was supply me with a promo, you know, to plug their towns and have plug it too. But I thought, okay, now we didn't plan to run all over the state necessarily, but it opened the state up for us to, you know, to expand and not have to burn out, you know, every town. We could go out and get more spot shows. I got a message as don't try to get too big. That's called paranoia. My first thought was, Jesus, do they think I want to go into competition with them?
Wow.
That was the way I felt, that they thought I was going to try to step out among them. I mean, do I just look absurd or stupid or totally ignorant to you? That's the point.
How many guys did you have, too, just for the record, how many guys did you have that were on their own, and how many guys did you have that were under contract to them?
God, you're going to – I don't know, to tell you the truth. I had a hell of a roster. Jimmy and Danny had a good crew too, but I had a bigger crew. See, I got most of the cruiserweights out of WCW, right? And then I got everybody out of Memphis when they shut that down. And then I had at least 10 guys of my own who fit right in the mix as well. There were times, believe me, I don't like three-way dances and four-corner tag matches and all that crap. It muddles the air. It's hard to get people over. But I ran things like that until they started thinning the roster out on me, just to get everybody on the shows. And I know there was some, he's trying to get his own guys over. I did try to get the guys who deserved to be over, and I had guys that belonged in that mix, no matter what the guys who were under contract thought. I had guys that belonged in that mix, but I had a hell of a crew, but they didn't want you to get too big. And the other part is you can't, and I've said this to you before, I've said it on the show before, you can't, if you don't give the trainers, head coaches, managers, whatever the hell you want to call them, it's just like minor league baseball or basketball or football or anything else. We work with these people every day. And somebody that writes for television or movies is going to sit 1,000 miles away and say, I want that guy because his ass looks nice, or he smiles pretty, or he shook my hand yesterday, but no reason to do with wrestling. You see, the point is everybody that's been a star in this business before it became entertainment actually learned to wrestle before they learned to be anything else, including Helmsley and Michaels and Taker and Jericho. So what was wrong with that process? It produced the Funks and Briscoe and Harley and Flair. Well, let's change it. Let's produce Kofi and Santino and Hornswoggle. I shouldn't throw Kofi in with that mix. But you get my point. I mean, well, like Monday night, I'm watching an NCAA champion walking out about hitting himself in the face. What the hell does that got to do with anything? I see the Indian guy come out and put his turban. Now, there's a good example. What is the value of that turban in a glass case? You've got all night to come up with an answer. Okay. But, I mean, the point is here, Mike, if you're trying to make it – here again, I've never written a movie, but here's the deal. How long has he been there? Mahal's been there a long time. He does jobs. the whole thing with the turban just makes him look even stupider by doing a job because they've got this elaborate gimmick. But the point is, if you can say, well, it's an old family turban, it's handed down 20 generations, or it's got $10 trillion hidden in the lining, I don't care what you come up with. Well, why wasn't it there when he first walked in the door? Because we came up with something to get him over. No, you didn't. You don't even have a clue to how to get him over.
No,
that's
you came up with... Yeah, you came up with something stupid that he could have, you know, when you sold a little doll or in a goofy game.
He came up with something
like that.
Now that he can, then when he gets beat. So what the hell? He's wearing his turban and he gets beat now, but he wasn't wearing his turban before. What happened? He got beat. Okay. Okay. Works for me. It's consistency anyway. And tomorrow he can shave his head and he can still get beat. I mean, you know, I was looking at.
Well, that's actually, hold on, give me 1 second here as you get to Long Island IC here in a minute.
Tell Tate to cool it, you know.
That's right. Of course, he's going to run the music. We'll be right back here on Ringside Wrap.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television tapings. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling at the Academy Theater in Avondale State. We're also at the Masquerade every month or so. Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling, and you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap. Les Thatcher along with me, Mike Sempervivi. In about 5 minutes, we're going to be talking to Kevin Kelly, Ring of Honor announcer, about everything that he's got coming up and they've got coming up. WrestleMania weekend in Florida, and Les, thank God now that the bills are paid. Zack Ryder, Monday night.
Well, I was just looking at him and thinking, he's a good-looking kid, right, without the woo-woo-woo and the goofy headband and all the other crap. And the stupid, you know, sunglasses stuff. I'm thinking, what could you, you know, actually, maybe you could have made this kid mean something without all that stuff if you'd have started with him right. Because I think he'd work a little bit. He's in good shape. He's a handsome kid, you know, but they've turned him into a doofus. And that's all he's ever going to be. I mean, it's just, you know, it's, you know. So the people, I mean, I don't know who pulls the trigger on all this stuff. If it's the writers and somebody needs to sit on them, but it's not the guy, you know, it's not the trainers in developmental, because they actually know how to do their job. Something quick about Raw. Now that I'm on a time on the time tick tick tick, because the commercial thing will come up again. Jesus, I want to hear the Empire, that girl through her nasal voice in the Empire one more time.
I love how she puts emphasis on the Empire.
Empire. And we do this other place every month or so. That, who writes those scripts? Jesus. Anyway, Monday night, what little The Rock did with Cena was more important than all the singing and rapping and being tag team partners. And I thought, and then the way, Taker and Michael and Helmsley played their thing. My point is, dummy down, whether it's Ring of Honor, whether it's TNA, dummy it down. Our business is about over-accentuation, because that's what we're built on. But we've taken it to the point of absurdity. If Rock and Cena had a play, they got such a great reaction out of Dwayne just coming in, giving the Rock bottom, except it shouldn't have been Mark Henry. Mark Henry's been their strongest heel for quite some time, and they're just stupid to beat him. But, you know, but him coming in giving the Rock bottom got a hell of a reaction. He looked at Cena. Cena was left with his mouth hanging open. See, those little things are, you know, are more effective than all the gaga, much more, because they leave you wanting something. They leave you thinking, what could have happened if? And, you know, that's so much more important. And you know, every wrestler in the three, if you call ROH and TNA two of the three major promotions, most of these guys need to figure that out. But everybody's turning into an... The best match in Florida, when Kevin gets on, and I'll tell him the same thing, will be Bennett and Lance Storm. Because...
Oh, God, yes.
There won't be 47 dives through the rope in the first 50 seconds, and there won't be 27,000 Muay Thai kicks. Right? Lance will put the best wrestling match on in a place. Does that mean that nobody else is capable? Yes, but they're busy getting their individual pops. They're busy entertaining a few people opposed to a lot.
And you know, Mike Bennett, not, you know, who is that? Because I don't know. See, Mike Bennett is the heel in the situation. Because I know we're running up on time here. How does that work? Does Lance Storm go in there and go, kid, okay, you go ahead and call the match, or?
No, oh, absolutely not. No.
Okay.
Stop right there. No.
Okay.
I don't know, Mike. Booker Bob's probably listening to this, and he'll email me. My computer's not turned on, Booker. But anyway, at some point, I'll read his email, and he'll tell me yes or no about this. I don't even know if Bennett knows how to call a match in ring. After all, he's a young guy, and most of them don't. But Lance does, and he will. I mean, and he should. He's the veteran. You know, he should call it, and he'll go out there and make the kid better than the kid's been made already. That I believe, I truly do. You know, but anyway, I think that'll, I mean, in terms of classic professional wrestling, or as close to it as you're going to get in the year 2012, that's going to be the match.
And it's going to be one of the, of anything going on there WrestleMania week, and I know there's lots of things going on with lots of different promotions and different things going on. I mean, obviously, you know what WWE is going to bring you, but that's, you know, probably going to be, when you look at overall the weekend of everybody involved, one of the best matches of anybody that weekend, and looking forward to that. And hopefully we can get Lance Storm on here one day, too.
In terms of psychology, if they just match what they did last year, Helmsley and Taker will steal the show, period. I don't care how many promotions are running in that city on that weekend, they will top, they'll be the icing on a cake.
And no shot against Dragon Gate or Dragon Gate fans here, too, but when it comes to athleticism, you know, because I know a lot of people look at that style and they say athleticism and things like that, Chris Jericho and CM Punk, even though I think by far Undertaker and Triple H is going to be the best thing of the weekend. I mean, I just can't see how it's not. You know, as far as athletics in the ring go, I'm not going to say Steamboat Savage sort of thing, but I think Jericho and Punk are going to do everything they possibly can to carve their niche out of things. But when we get back, a guy who knows a little bit something about WrestleManias and knows a lot more about Ring of Honor right now, ROH announcer Kevin Kelly, when we come back on Ringside Wrap.
Hi, this is Frank Beard of ZZ Top for Rad. If you're out partying and drinking, and we all know that happens sometimes, please don't get behind the wheel. Give up the keys to a designated driver. Please don't drink and drive.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hey, parents, it's hard to pick up your kids nowadays without embarrassing them.
Hi, honey.
Mom, not in front of my friends.
Well, kiss the embarrassment goodbye with OMGPS. OMGPS is a state-of-the-art navigation system that tells you exactly how far away you need to park when you pick up your kids.
Keisha at mall. Proceed to outer food court.
But she's not at the food court. She's at the movie theater.
Exactly. OMGPS comes with patented preteen reasoning technology to pinpoint precise pickup locations and minimize embarrassment.
In 100 yards, turn off the oldies music.
Thanks, OMGPS.
OMGPS is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Hey, I'm Bonnie Raitt. Remember how excited you were as a kid to go back to school at the end of the summer? Seeing old friends, making new ones, getting new books in a new locker, a clean slate. And music class, that special room where you went to sing and perform with your friends and learn all sorts of interesting stuff about great composers and instruments and different kinds of music. We remember our music teachers because they were so passionate about helping us learn to love music. They helped spark a love for listening to notes and voices and rhythms that continues to enrich our lives even today. Know what? I bet your kids feel the same way about music class. Ask them. And make sure they get involved with music in school this year.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Ranger Station.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting in the forest.
Uh-huh.
1 second I'm having a smoke. Next thing I know, I'm face-to-face with Smokey Bear.
Wow.
And he told me it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
Did you know 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans?
I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous and you're not. Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap. Mike Sempervivi here with you, along with Les Thatcher, and we'd like to welcome onto the line right now Ring of Honor announcer and Kevin Kelly. And Kevin, how are you doing tonight?
I am great, Mike. And Les, it is great to talk with you once again, my friend.
How are you, my friend? And I'll give you a proper introduction. ROH is commentator.
I'm sorry, yes.
To be honest with you, Mike, I wasn't even listening to the introduction that you gave me because I got a joke. I was thinking, you know, in the wake of what happened today with the New Orleans Saints and the controversy of Bounty Gate and suspensions being levied, can you imagine what would have happened if Roger Goodell was around when Harley Race was telling everybody to take the damn money? I mean, could you imagine how long Harley Race would have been suspended for? It all comes back to wrestling.
Boy,
well, hey, Kevin, I was trying
to think
believe
what happened with the Saints while we're on that subject? I mean, Sean Payton out for the entire season, huh?
I tell you, this is going to, I think this is going to go down in history as like I heard one of the guys on ESPN say, it's the biggest suspension in football since Horning and Callis 50 years ago, and they were suspended for affiliations with gambling. I think it's really going to change the culture of the NFL, and I think the player suspensions that are forthcoming could equal the magnitude of what we've seen, but Peyton's suspension certainly is by far the biggest and is going to be very detrimental to the long term of that franchise.
Yeah, because he and Breeze are like brother and sister. I mean, they're like connected at the hip. And
Well, they still got to re-sign Breeze. And, you know, if I'm Drew and I've got only so many years, I only got so many bumps in the tank, right, Les?
Right.
I'm thinking, wait a minute, my coach, my play caller, my friend is not going to be around for a year. I might want to think about taking my talents elsewhere.
Yeah,
that's why
it could
be so franchise crippling, because you lose the GM for 6 months, you lose two number two draft picks. Greg Williams is probably, he's never getting a job in the NFL again, at least as a proper defensive coordinator. Yeah, just a blowaway message sent by the NFL. See, I was trying to think of something funny on the fly, too, there, Kevin, in the very beginning part, because I don't know if you saw the preview for the show that our fearless leader, Rich Tate, had put up, mentioning that we're going to have an interview with Daniel Bryan as well as Kelly Kelly tonight on the program. So,
tremendous.
Yes. So,
yeah.
Remember to skewer Rich for that one.
Kelly is going to smile a lot and hold her hands up. And
yes,
she does that really well.
Les, I'm sure you would agree there is a great family resemblance between she and I, isn't there?
Really. I didn't want to bring that out, but I know there were times when you and I worked close by. It was hard for me to keep my hands off of you. I mean, I know.
I have that way, but you were very gentle. But the good thing about that is, with everything that's going around these days is I do get a lot of offers for dates. But unfortunately, the guys that ask me out, they don't think I'm very bright. So, but anyway.
Well, Kelly Kelly, not quite an orator, but yourself and Nigel McGuinness, the best announcing crew by far, arguably, unless you're a really big Joe Rogan and Mike Goldberg fan, but in any type of canvas-matted madness. And you got the shows coming up in Florida, and Les and I were just talking about what we both think the best match is going to be. It's not like we planned this ahead of time or anything, but Mike Bennett and Lance Storm coming up at the showdown in the sun, day one WrestleMania weekend down in Florida. What are your thoughts on that match and Lance coming back to smack around Mike Bennett a little bit, possibly?
You guys are way too smart because, you know, again, you do an interview show, and it's like, Kevin, what match do you expect to steal the show? And that's the one that I certainly had circled and underlined. I mean, listen, we know the main event, the triple threat for the Ring of Honor world title, is going to be tremendous. Davey Richards, Eddie Edwards, Roderick Strong, those three are going to bash each other from one end of the building to the other because they want nothing more than to be the world champion. But when you talk about something a little bit deeper to prove, you know, no material gain as far as title, but what Lance is really... what he got upset about was the fact that Mike Bennett has shown no respect for Ring of Honor and, in turn, no respect for professional wrestling. But here's a guy who's coming back, and he's 43 years old now, and Bennett's in his prime, and it could be one of those situations where the spirit is willing, But in the latter stages of that match, will the legs be weak? But it's going to be a very interesting journey, I'm sure, that they both take us on.
The promo I saw Lance cut on the show here Saturday is the best promo that was on the show. I mean, it, by far. It was a strong for him, but, I mean, it was just the way it was put together. That was, you know, I, and again, my facetious self, I said, Mike's not saying what I said to him, too. I said, it will also be a match that there won't be 27 dives through the ropes in the first 30 seconds, and I won't need a seven-digit calculator to keep track of the Muay Thai kicks.
Right. Well, you know, Les, I know that, and again, you and I share similar opinion about this. The Ring of Honor style has, in my opinion, has greatly changed for the better over the past few years. It isn't quite where I would like to get it, where I would like to see it as a fan of the science, as a fan of the sport, you know, and as just a plain fan. But it's getting there. And there are elemental forces that are changing that for the good, and of course Jim Cornette is at the top of that list. And you know, while I have very little say and influence, you know, I do my part. And Brutal Bob Evans, that you guys know very well, he's doing his part. And there are little groups that are really reaching out and trying to help change the culture as it has gotten away. Because Ring of Honor at first was an all-star, it was an all-star game. Roll the best unsigned guys into one building in one night, line them up, and let's see who knocks it out of the park. And each guy would come back through the curtain saying, go top that. Well, they would try. But now, whereas it seems like it's more about the pace of the entire show, that the opening match has its flavor, but then by the time we get to our main event, it's the culmination of a very satisfactory meal. That's kind of what Ring of Honor to me is now, in 2012, with the hopes of continuing to improve, as there's always room to get better.
You know me. I sit and drive myself nuts picking things apart, and I'm thinking Corny must be on Valium if he's not, because I see things that, little things that probably the, well, I know the fans sitting in the building in Baltimore are, you know, that's kind of like ECW, only on a different level. You know, they're into everything, but just little things. I was saying to Mike earlier, Kevin, I said, our business is about accentuating, over-accentuating. And I said, I think across the board in 2012, everybody needs to dummy that down a little bit, because there's nothing that is actually fresh and exciting because everything is done to death. And I still, you know, I've worked with Adam Cole, and I'm glad to see Adam get a push. And after watching his match, what's the kid's name from OVW that's doing the hippie gimmick?
Chris Silvio, yeah, the psychedelic superstar.
Yeah, but I know Adam's over in Japan with Sammy and DJ Hyde, and I sent him an email. I said, okay, it's not, you know, I know you can work, so stop being an entertainer. He hit the missile drop kick and went down selling some mystery thing because the hippie wasn't coming up. And I talked to, you know, 1001, 1002. If he's not moving, I am. And that's one, and that just drives me crazy, you know, that you guys, you hit the, why aren't you covering him? Well, in the back, we plan something else. Forget the plan. Cover the asshole.
Well, and unless you can, I mean, one of the things that I have to, you know, catch myself in that same regard is, you know, these guys that are doing this, I mean, Adam Cole, great, tremendously bright future, world is his oyster, anything he wants, he's 21 years old.
I know,
you know?
I know.
And just still a baby and just really learning, and you're going to see those things. I think everybody understands when you have a roster that is this young, And the Ring of Honor roster, with, of course, just a few exceptions like Charlie and Shelton, who've added great veteran influence in the locker room, the core is 24 to 25 years old. And, you know, with about 4 to 5 years of experience, some more, some less. But that seems to be about the average number. And you realize, wow, these guys have still so far yet to come, but they have so much going for them. it's important to shape them and get them going in the right direction now at this point so that they don't, you know, go off in into Neverland and wind up never getting anywhere.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, all I'm waiting for, Kevin, is to see a legitimate alternative. I mean, legitimately that, you know, spends more time on the psychology opposed to the cheap pop stuff, honestly. And yes, there's some great athletes. I've had a chance to work with Davey. I've worked with Eddie, Adam, to name a few. I'm trying, well, of course, Charlie and Sheldon, but
right.
they're hardly kids. But, you know, it's, Jesus, I want to see more mat work, you know. And I think to build to the spot opposed to just spots, you know, to be doing spots. I first worked with Davey, and I say this with all respect because he's a hell of an athlete. He really is. When I first worked with him at High Spots in Charlotte, right after he'd won the Super 8, I saw shades of Benoit. And but now I see too much entertainment. You know, the whole Wolf thing in the midst of kicking somebody's ass to bend over and go into that stance and oh, man, bullshit. You know, it just drives me nuts. You know, it needs to be more solid than that. And but of course, it's not. And you know, and I understand. You know, it is whatever it is. And I drive myself crazy when I watch it. But anyway, it's you guys are doing a good job. I think Nigel gets better. When he was up here, we sat and talked. And first thing I said is get rid of the sunglasses. People need to make eye contact with you. And they finally did. I noticed Saturday. I don't know if you hid them from him or he forgot to bring them.
No, I don't. I think it was a conscious decision on his part.
Yeah. But
so
you know, that's
what, to you.
Yeah, and I told him, I says, you're a wrestler. Talk like a wrestler. I mean, you know, I said, you know, tell Kevin to ask you, well, how would you have, you've wrestled this guy before. And I mean, not that he had to tell you, but I mean, you knew that anyway. But I said, be an analyst more than, you know, just a color guy. Because that's your, you know, that should be your strong point, having been the champion and everything. So,
right.
But, you know, he's getting better. I mean, I know he was, you know, Christ, you don't walk into there and be comfortable with that initially. But he's getting better, and I'm happy for him. I really am.
Yeah, I think we've started to settle in with some chemistry and you know, one thing, and I'm, Les, you worked with so many greats over the years. You know, there's certain guys that you work with that would step on you and, you know, just couldn't get the timing right, you know, it just didn't gel, and there were other people that would be like hand in glove. Well, that was what Nigel and I were like right off the bat. I was, you know, out of all the things I took away from the first set of tapings that we did, I was like, Nigel, you did awesome because you've never done this before on any consistent basis, and I don't think we stepped on each other once over the course of 4 hours, which was amazing.
Yeah.
He listened to me, I listened to him. We told stories that flowed together as best we could while trying to feel our way through, you know, this whole new thing that we were doing. And now we've had, you know, several tapings and a couple pay-per-views under our belts, and, you know, things seem to be going much better. But again, just like everything else, there's room to improve and grow, and hopefully when we get to Showdown in the Sun next weekend, we will have two more fine efforts. I'm certainly looking forward to it.
You know,
now
the only thing
he's got more upside than Mike Hogwood is what you're saying.
Bless Mike Hogwood. Bless his heart.
He had no shot. No, and
he had
love
no chance. Did you guys know how he got the job? He got the job with doing Ring of Honor on HDNet because he was best friends and next door neighbor with the director of sports for HDNet. And so since they were putting the bill for the production, they got to pick one announcer. And then they said, well, this guy doesn't know wrestling, so pick somebody that knows wrestling. I was like, well, let's put Prazak in there because at least he knows the product. And it was a disaster.
See, I never saw that show, so you guys have got one up on me here. Was he that bad, really?
He had a real nice country charm about him, Les, and he would have fit in very well back in the territory days, regional promotion, because he had that, you know, just that down-home, you know, cheer for the good guys and aw shucks and would do a great job reading local sponsors and pitching to packages. But as far as a show like Ring of Honor, it just didn't fit. And Then
he was a guy who would have wished Fannie Mae Jones a happy 91st birthday in the midst of a hot finish, right?
That would have been right in his wheelhouse. But for what Ring of Honor was calling for in 2008, 2009, and 2010, that wasn't the deal.
Yeah, Hog. I love the Hog. Jefferson Pilot, the ACC games he would do, and
as far as helping Nigel along too, and you know, I know he's done some acting classes and things like that, and he was always a pretty good talker. Of course, once Les got him out of the shell and everything, but as far as putting on the headset and working with him, what did he need the most help with, or where did you really think you were able to step in and kind of help him with a few things, you know, trying to pick up the play-by-play?
One thing that we've always talked about, and the most important lesson that Jim Ross ever taught me, was to speak in sound bites. And he had Nigel had a good grasp on that right away. The only thing that we needed to work on was just sort of that energy, or at least the perception of energy from Nigel, because his voice and his vocal tone generally kind of goes to the downside a little bit. So we always just have to find ways to, you know, make sure that he's ratcheted up, and just, you know, we're having a conversation. You don't have to scream at me, but everything just needs to have an occasional bit of punch if you find that it's lacking. And then over a while you get, you know, it just becomes habit. But he's greatly improved in that regard. Just relying on his expertise as a former world champion. You know, there isn't anybody else that I could go to be able to say, okay, well, you were the champion. What's it like? What's Davey Richards dealing with now? How does all of this affecting him? What's his mental preparation like? How's he feeling physically? You know, what's it like sitting in the locker room all night long and hearing the cheers and the pops from the crowd, knowing that you're the main event, and realizing that you have to follow, you know, 3 or 4 hours of fantastic action? You know, and he's given great analysis in that regard. So it really hadn't been a whole lot he's had to work on necessarily, other than just developing his own style, finding his own voice, and it's some of his comments that he's come up with lately. Oh my gosh! I mean, they're so dry and deadpan, they almost sneak past you, but they left me crying. I mean, some of the comments he's made about Maria Kanellis, I can't say anything else. I just have to sit there and bite my finger.
Have you ever been to Hair Arena in Dayton, Kevin?
No, I'm going there for the first time on April 29th. Looking forward to it.
Oh, are you going? Okay, cool.
Well, Ring of Honor is, and to be determined, but we're really excited about that. And I got a nice message on Twitter from the general manager of the Silverhawks, so that's going to be a fun time.
That was that's got a hell of a history for wrestling. I mean,
yeah,
Hair was
all those guys were on top there, and back in the day, Cornette was telling us some of the history of that building, because some of the guys weren't as familiar with it, of course, as he was. Go figure. And,
hell, when I was a kid, I mean, Al Haff's promotion ran Hair Arena in Dayton. Buddy Rogers, Fritz von Goering, Buddy Austin, Siki and Bearcat, the guys like that wrestled there. I worked there for Barnett Doyle for the Sheik back in the 60s. Well, when I was running the tours for WCW up here, we ran there in the early 80s. So, I mean, there's a hell of a wrestling history in that building.
Mm-hmm. Certainly is. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Coming up here, Mike. Oh, coming up here in Florida too, with March 30th and 31st. I know the iPay-per-views, and you know, apparently, you know, good numbers again coming off the iPay-per-views, if reports are to be believed. Obviously, don't know for sure. At least I don't, Kevin. Unless you want to give us some insider information right here, but you know, that had to be a positive feeling. And coming into WrestleMania weekend with these two shows. Talked about Bennett and Storm, and talked a little bit about the main events, but lots of stuff, including Chikara interaction. We've got Steen and Generico back, you know, at least one night only, going to kill each other for at least one last time, and the Briscoes and the World's Greatest Tag Team. All the stuff going on that weekend. What are just your feelings on some other things to look out for, or some other things to note?
Well, I know that a lot of fans from all over the world are going to be coming to South Florida, And if anybody is making the trip down for all the other events, you know, make it a point to come over to the War Memorial Auditorium to see at least one of, if not both of the events. It's Friday night at 8, Saturday at 1, and it's convenient to get to. The event Friday night really centers around the world title and the fact that, you know, the current champion, the two most recent former champions, triple threat match, and somebody's walking out with the title. Less than 24 hours later, whoever the winner of that match is, they will have to turn right around and defend that title, because each of those three men in that triple threat on Friday are already booked in singles matches on Saturday. So you know that there's going to be significant rooting for one or the other. Like, for example, Davey Richards is set to face Michael Elgin, and Roderick Strong takes on Jay Lethal, and Eddie Edwards faces Kevin Steen. That's on Saturday. So we know Kevin Steen versus El Generico has just been recently made for Friday night's event. La Revancha was all that was said in the two words El Generico emailed to the office when he wanted the opportunity to get his hands on Kevin Steen once again. First time we'll see Generico since Final Battle. And Steen on his never-ending quest to somehow capture the Ring of Honor world title, hold the company hostage, and send Jim Cornette off into the mental hospital once and for all. He's on his way to accomplishing that. We'll see what happens after this weekend. Duel, first time ever with
Kevin,
the All Night Express.
I hate to cut you off here, but I got to ask you about Kevin Steen. Kevin Steen is a unique personality that would have probably issues trying to thrive in TNA or in WWE if they would want such a guy. He is kind of an ROH guy. Having the character that he does and the character that he is, which is running opposed in a lot of ways to what Ring of Honor is, what does he mean to the fan base? Because and what does he mean to Ring of Honor as far as being that type of personality that only could fit there?
Mike, I'm sensing that you're holding back.
What he's trying to say is, what the hell do you see in Kevin Steen?
That's what he's trying to say.
I'll ask it. He won't, because I'm sitting here scratching my head every week saying, what the fuck is going on? What is this about?
Well, I mean, I don't
see it, Kevin. I really don't.
But as a brawling and a unique, I do mean in just a, you know, ECW had guys that just were, you know, I'm not putting that category, but they were unique guys to ECW. Shane Douglas in ECW, you saw him in other places, and he's just, Kevin Steen is a character unique to Ring of Honor, but, you know.
Well, wait a minute now, so did Dusty Rhodes look like the Mr. Olympia? Did Abdul the Butcher look like that? No.
What I'm saying is, Mike, I agree, but
I think we can't look at it in such a myopic prism either, that I think you have to look at it in terms of there are all shapes and sizes that, you know, if we want a difference of style on a show, if we want every match to be the same, we book every guy that looks the same, that does the exact same stuff. And that's one of the things that, you know, Ring of Honor is trying to change. So having a Kevin Steen, who is a fantastically gifted wrestler, and may not look the part of the traditional athlete of the day, I have great respect for him for his in-ring ability. I'm concerned as to whether his body can hold up over the long term, because he is not in the best of shape. I think he's working on improving it, but we'll see what happens. He has an opportunity. He has a certain measure of fandom. There are people, as Jim Cornette says, but listen, there are people that like Charles Manson too. So, you know, there's somebody for everybody. But I think that by presenting people of all shapes and sizes, and you're allowing the fans to pick and choose who they like, it is not a bad thing. Some people might say the same thing about the athletes that represent Chikara.
I won't even go there.
Well, I mean, again, But there are attractions. There are attractions in every era of professional wrestling. And I don't see this as any different than that.
Kevin, if you don't run for president of the United States with this sweet talk of yours, I'll miss my guess.
I mean,
you are the best mouthpiece they have, and I mean that
you can give
in the nicest way.
I appreciate it, but you have to give people an opportunity. You can't just say, all right, well, I don't like you, and I think you suck, so therefore you need to go away. Well, wait a minute now. Maybe it'll work. Maybe it will. Are they going to come and pull our license and pull us off the air if we put Kevin Steen on TV for a while? No. Let's see how it works. Let's just see. And there we go. And that's really it. And they're going to give Machine
if you're going to go as far as he can go. If you're going to hand him to me and you say you've got to use him, then I want to find out if he can actually work on the mat because – yes, you would look at him and expect him to be drink three beers and get into a barroom fight. I don't want to see a resurrection of ECW. So I would say now, if you really want to shock the people, go behind this guy, take him down, get some switches, and show me you wrestle better than the guys who look better than you.
Right. Ultimately. He is going to either prove that he can do it, or his body's going to fall apart on him because he's not in shape, or he's going to be exposed. So there you go. And if you don't give him this shot, then you run up against the fact of, well, you know, if you just would have given Kevin Steen the ball, things would be a whole lot different here. Nope. Kevin Steen's going to get a chance to run the ball. He's going to have that, top spot in that company. He's in the mix, in that top realm, that top tier. But he's going in there with guys like Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards and Michael Elgin and Mike Bennett and Jay Lethal. Can he hang with the likes of those? We will see.
You know, I tell you, another match on Friday that I think is really going to be a show stealer for all promotions down there that weekend, or could at least be a real big surprise. The Briscoes against Mikey Nichols and Shane Hayes, who all four of the guys have obviously Noah experienced the Briscoes at a very young age. It's amazing. I've been watching the Briscoes for so long that I forgot they were so young when they went over to Noah and won the junior tag titles. Obviously a little bit different situation with Nichols and Hayes going over, but Kevin, probably a lot of people listening haven't had a chance to really see Nichols and Hayes that much up until really the last couple of weeks. What can you tell us about them and how, I mean, obviously people are amped to see the Briscoes in Haas and Benjamin again, but can't this be a real surprise of the weekend as well?
Well, they can, and again, Haston Nichols is a proving ground match, so if they can beat the champs or hold them to a draw, they'll get a future world tag team title opportunity. The first time that I saw those two was in Cincinnati, where they won the Rise and Prove tournament to earn this opportunity. Big guys, move well, interesting style, a little bit different than anything else you'll see. This will be, now they have great international experience, they're world travelers, but this is different. This is the Briscoes, this is a huge weekend, this is Showdown in the Sun. Will their nerves get the better of them? They recently had some TNA experience. I think that will help. I think all of those things can make them a better opponent for the Briscoes. But we'll see. You know, will their knees be knocking? Will they all of a sudden forget the basics? Or will they just take it in stride and perform well? I think the latter. I think they're going to do great. I think it could be a very surprising match because I think there will be a lot of folks that are there. They're going to go, when those two come out, they go, who the hell are these two? But at the end of it, they're going to go, wow, that was a great match.
Were you here in Cincinnati when they were here?
I wasn't. I missed out, and I heard it was a great event. I saw it. I mean, I called it for DVD. Fantastic building.
I've never been in that building.
Looked great. Yeah, we got to get back there.
Yeah, I didn't go. I had to. I had clients at the gym. But, you know, Gary had called me a couple months before and said, you know, about the Masonic temp, and I said, he said, it's next door Tapa. I said, I've been in Tapa Auditorium 100 times, or more probably in my lifetime. I'd never been in the building before, so I had no idea what it was like.
It had, you know, when you see it on camera, it was deceivingly spacious, but it was intimate at the same time. There was enough room on the floor for the guys to do their stuff, but you know, and there was a good, you know, spacious atmosphere in the stands. But it felt like, you know, because again, that theater type seating where kind of everybody was right over the top, it looked really cool, and with some ornate architecture and, you know, fantastic design. I want to definitely see that building more.
Yeah, I like I say, I've never been. How did they draw? I mean, legitimately, I heard all sorts of stories, but do you have any idea what the number was?
I heard it was 600.
Okay, well, good. That's better than I had heard here.
Six,
you know,
paid.
But
600 paid. So
yeah,
yeah,
good.
That was good. They were very happy with the turnout, and we are certainly going to be back.
Good. Good. Well, you know what I want to ask you about, because I actually watched it in part because of you, is Lucha America.
Oh, Lucha Libre USA. Ooh.
Yeah, I was fascinated by the guy wrestling his ex-wife and stuff. I thought, pass me a joint, let me get buzz here, and I want to see more of this.
It was an interesting. It was an interesting time. They're getting ready to do like a 12-city tour all across the Southwest, out in California. They got Dr. Pepper as a sponsor, and they're going to be running a lot of events out there. And I wish them well. I don't think they could quite get things worked out and figured out with MTV2 as to when to have the show on and whatever. It's the way things go. But from a production standpoint, it was great. You know, the people that were there, the talent that they brought in were top notch. Everybody worked hard, and I had a great time. They taped out in the Hard Rock in Albuquerque, so we got to stay out there. It was fun.
Cool. Jindrak is really over with that crowd, isn't he?
Well, you're not kidding, man. He's a rock star down in Mexico. He's writing books. He's on those telenovelas or whatever they call themselves, the Mexican soap operas.
Yeah,
he's got a lot of stuff going on, and very, very serious and committed.
That's great. That's good. I'm happy for Mark. He's a good guy. I like Mark.
Yep.
Kevin, I was messing around on Twitter last night, and speaking of, you know, international flavor, seemed to caught you by surprise, or at least you had found out that A-Train, Matt Bloom, Giant Bernard over in Japan, is actually making his way back as War Tensai to WWE. How much do you get a chance to watch? Obviously, you're incredibly busy, but how much do you get a chance to watch anything from Japan or Mexico or anywhere else? And what are your thoughts on Bernard coming back?
I was a big fan of him and Carl Anderson, and I was hoping that they could find their way to Ring of Honor, because I thought that would have been very interesting. And in fact,
I'm going to ask you a crazy question. You know, Carl started with me.
Yeah, I know.
And he doesn't live far. We had lunch a couple times. We don't see each other a lot. But why have he and ROH never hooked up? Do you have any idea?
I don't know. That's a good question. It could be because of his NOAH schedule has kept him busy. I don't really know.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of conversations about having them come in, and. I think this deal has been brewing for a while, because it was kind of like, well, probably not, you know, and is something up, you know, is a NOAH tour? Well, we'll get back to you on that, and then finally they let him know, yeah, probably going back to WWE. So
yeah,
but good for Matt. That's fantastic, and I could see Carl doing some stuff as well, but I think that if he's able to bring some of that intensity and just that different style that we saw from Japan over to WWE, he's got a unique opportunity. He's always such a unique athlete. He's got a chance to kind of remake his image post-Attitude era Prince Albert or A-Train or whatever it was he was called, to do something different and unique and be a character and be a big monster that they need, because they need monsters.
They need some monsters for the monsters to work with so they can stop working with the midgets. That's what.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got to have...
I said to somebody today, I said the David and Goliath matches have been worn out because they mean nothing anymore. I mean, you know, Mysterio worked with Kane, he worked with Show, and now it's, you know, it's just, it's lost its luster, I think. I mean, it really has.
Well, again, you know, with it not being a territory, it's impossible for guys to go in and out and go away to come back fresh. You know, I wrote about it recently on WrestleZone. You know, it's not you know, a territory situation, but it's the wheel. And you know that you're going to get a time on top, and that time's going to come to an end, and then you're going to be at the bottom of the wheel in the doghouse getting ready to get released. Oh, wait, we see something in him. We have a new idea. Oh, look, we love him again, and then he's back on top. So it's that, and it's frustrating, and you have to see how guys handle it when they're at the bottom. You know, Mark Henry's been around and around and around on that wheel so many times, he's probably got vertigo, but... you know, when it looks like somebody's about to get fired, if they just sit tight and don't do anything stupid, there'll be another thing coming around for them again. So,
yeah, I thought Monday night
always right around the corner.
Yeah, I thought Monday night. I knew Cena had to beat Mark because of Mania, and I thought, Jesus, Mark's been one of the best heels they've had this past year, and the last thing they needed to do was beat him for any reason, for Christ's sake. But you're right. That's the way the game's played there.
And that's a testament to Henry's longevity and his ability to stay the course and not get rattled, continue to do his thing, battle injuries, battle frustration, battle the doubt that, you know, people have had about him, and just keep plugging along and doing his thing and, you know, waiting for that opportunity to come around. So, like, I wrote about Miz because, you know, people were like, gosh, Miz was in the, you know, match with Cena a year ago, and now he's getting beaten in 2 seconds on television. What the heck is going on? Is he getting ready to get future endeavored? No, he's just at that low point right now, and they'll figure out something else to do with him and swing it back around if he doesn't, you know, mentally implode, and, you know, time between now and then. But he seems like a pretty high character guy, so I think he'll keep it together, and he'll be fine in the long run.
Now, hopefully you guys keep plugging along as well, because I'm a big fan of the TV show. You know, it's not exactly like I'm sitting there again in 1986 watching a show, but it gives me the most feeling like that. And actually, I've had a chance to watch a bunch of Ohio Valley shows recently where it's just, you know, it's nice to actually sit there and have, you know, coherent television with coherent commentators, the NC announcers there less, you know, just, you know, things making sense in a pro wrestling way, and you guys on that TV show do a very, very good job of that. And the iPay-per-views as well. I know some of the kinks have been worked out since Final Battle that way. And, Kevin, you really look forward to seeing those shows coming up here at the end of the month. And so you're doing a little bit of writing there. Where can we see these writings?
I pen an occasional column over at WrestleZone.com, and usually I try to... I always try to link, you know, like I'm sure that, you know, there's a lot of analogy that can be written about the, you know, what we talked about at the top with the Saints and Tebow situation and what it's like to be pushed out after being on top. And, you know, I'll find a way to tie that in somehow to professional wrestling. And,
well,
because I always like writing about other things other than just, you know, recapping shows or, you know, coming across like, you know, bitter old WWE announcer who's complaining about everything, you know. It's like, let's just take a different perspective on it and try to be fresh and get the people thinking and talking and stir up conversation. But
well, I think you can stir up some conversation if this breaking news is true. You can talk about moles maybe, because Warren Sapp is saying Jeremy Shockey is the one who dropped the dime on the New Orleans Saints.
I read that earlier today, and it wasn't confirmed, but now I guess... So Shockey was the guy who got cut by the Saints, who stooged off the fact that they had this underground bounty system that paid defensive players. Boy, that is great. What a high character guy, that Shockey. Oh, man.
And remember, he was in division with the Carolina Panthers, and I wonder if he's gotten cut or something or not, because he's got to see them twice this year.
Ooh,
he's a free agent now.
Oh, okay, yeah, he won't be re-signing with anybody playing the Saints this season, I'm sure.
Yeah, he is an unrestricted free agent, and I think he can certainly, you know, maybe he and Coach Greg Williams can you know, maybe get booked on like a fishing reality show or something. I don't think either of them will be worrying about the NFL for a while.
You guys remember when Buddy Ryan was accused of putting bounties on guys when he was with the Eagles?
Oh, yeah.
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah, he most certainly did.
Sure, Glanville did the same when he was a coordinator in Houston and Atlanta.
Absolutely. Oh, and he left tickets for Elvis at every game.
That was the only time I ever saw a guy got fired. Remember when he got fired from Houston and Bud Adams is crying, bawling, and Jerry Glanville is consoling him?
Yeah.
Bizarre.
I'm sorry I had to fire you.
Okay, I just want to thank you again so much for coming on, and hope to have you on again real soon here too, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you guys very much. And if anybody wants to, you know, share some thoughts about what they see at Showdown in the Sun, you can follow me on Twitter at RealKevinKelly. And I always like to hear from the fans and find out what's on their mind and what they think about, you know, ROH. And we'll get some good debate, at least in 140 characters or less.
Awesome. And everybody, will be right back with the interview with Daniel Bryan right after this break.
Nancy O'Dell here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. You know, style is a personal thing, and your lifestyle is your business. But if you take it on the road, then it becomes everybody's business. So please plan ahead. Call a cab or designate a driver before the party starts. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Hi there, I'm Trisha Yearwood. Kids have a lot on their plates these days. It can be hard as parents to stop and think about how something like learning music now can help them in the future. Music helps kids because it's a performing art, and children need to learn to perform well to succeed in society. Getting an 85% on a math test is pretty good, but hitting 85% of the right notes during a concert isn't good enough for most music students or their teachers. A special kind of practice and preparation goes into the discipline of performing music, and it helps kids perform better in all areas of their lives.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
The odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number one on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. The odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1, and 110. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn the signs of autism at AutismSpeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Rap. Mike Sempervivi, along with Les Thatcher, and Jonathan Williams, editor-in-chief of WrestlingWithPopCulture.com and host of the Georgia Wrestling Now show here on this network every week with Jerry Only. Interviewed Daniel Bryan this week, and let's cue that up and let you listen to the WWE World Champion talk about his climb in WWE, his first WrestleMania match, and more. And then when we come back, we're going to visit the old school and talk about great wrestling managers of the past. Here's Daniel Bryan.
Daniel Bryan, how you doing?
Good. How are you, Jonathan?
Doing all right. So, last year at WrestleMania, you were the U.S. champion in what was basically a dark match that devolved into a battle royal against the same opponent you're facing this year. How does it feel to be in one of the main events this year, holding a much bigger title in basically the same matchup?
It feels really vindicating that both me and Sheamus in the past year have really stepped up our games to be the point where we're at now, to be in the World Heavyweight Championship match at WrestleMania. Last year was such a bitter disappointment that we weren't on the actual main show, because I really felt that if we had been given the opportunity, we really could have done something to steal the show, you know.
Right.
But this year, you know, that's what I fully intend on doing. I fully intend for my first WrestleMania match to go out there and steal the show.
Oh, I didn't even think about the fact that it'd be your first WrestleMania.
Yep.
Well, I talked to you briefly last year at the WrestleMania Art Show, and I remember asking you if you thought, you know, you were U.S. champion at the time. I remember asking if you thought that was sort of a stepping stone, that you might have bigger opportunities, and obviously you have had bigger opportunities since then, in basically less than a year. So, and you've overcome some pretty big obstacles as the champion. So what do you have? Do you know what your role will be when you return to Atlanta for Raw the week before WrestleMania? And
you never know what's going to happen at Raw. Like, you literally never know. You show up to the building and have no idea what's going to happen or what you're going to do. But I can only assume it's going to be a huge show and there'll be big plans for everybody, because that is the last Monday Night Raw before we head into Mania. That is always one of the most exciting shows, one of the most unpredictable shows of the year.
Right. And then, of course, like I said, you've overcome some pretty big obstacles so far as champion, but Sheamus is a little different from Big Show and Mark Henry, so how are you preparing for him at WrestleMania?
Well, I prepare for him the same way I prepare for everybody. I keep doing my grappling, my kickboxing, all that kind of stuff, because the thing with Sheamus is he's tough to kick down. He keeps coming at you, and he hits very, very hard. But he's also kind of an idiot. And so if you can goad him into doing something stupid, he's bound to do something like that, and you can take advantage. So, I mean, I wrestled him on SmackDown maybe 6 weeks ago, and goaded him into doing something stupid. And you can just get away with things like that with people like Sheamus.
Right. Well, last year's WrestleMania, a lot of people were saying was kind of a changing of the guard, with a lot of the matches featured veterans facing newer guys. But it seems like this year, your match included, is relying more on the vets carrying the card. You know, you've only been in WWE for a few years, but overall, you've got a lot more experience as a wrestler than a lot of the other people. How do you feel about the way this year's card is shaping up and your spot on the card?
Well, it's definitely an exciting card, but I'm a little disappointed that it isn't more trying to establish new stars, right? Because after, you know, Hell in a Cell is going to be awesome with Triple H and Undertaker. Rock and Cena is going to be an amazing atmosphere. But come April 2nd, those guys aren't going to be on the road full-time. Those guys aren't going to be going to on the European tour with us. Those guys aren't going to be doing all that kind of stuff. And so for them to be highlighted in the biggest show of the year, and this is really the biggest WrestleMania of all time, you know, for them to be more highlighted than some of the younger guys who are going to be continue on wrestling, who are, you know, it's kind of unfortunate. Like, I would have liked to see Undertaker wrestle somebody who's from my generation. You know, like, that would have been cool to see somebody who, from my generation, who would take on The Undertaker and potentially beat him, you know. That said, this year's WrestleMania's card is stacked. You know, like, it is just going to be an awesome show. But from a performer standpoint, I wish there were more younger guys getting opportunities.
Right. Well, on the same token, you and CM Punk have become these sort of unlikely indie heroes as the two main champions in WWE over the past few months. And I guess a lot of people thought that especially you would not still be a champion by the time WrestleMania came around. So how do you feel looking at it from that perspective, giving guys who aren't necessarily new but who are new to WWE perhaps a bigger spot?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because CM Punk has been with WWE, I want to say, since 2005. I want to say he came up on TV in 2007.
Right.
So, I mean, he's been in some big matches, you know, and he's been in some big WrestleMania matches. So this is his first rodeo, you know. Like, he has earned his spot in being in the WWE Championship match. For me, it's really been a dream come true, and I honestly did not think after WrestleMania last year that I would be anywhere near the position that I'm in this year. You know, it's one of those things where it's a real, true blessing. And I feel very fortunate to be in this spot, you know, but there are a lot of guys who haven't gotten that opportunity, you know. And so it's interesting because me and CM Punk, we wrestled each other, I want to say, in front of about 35 people in like a 45-minute match in 2005. I mean, these are the two current top WWE champions, the WWE champion and the World Heavyweight Champion. But, you know, 7 years ago, wrestled in front of 35 people against each other. And to me, that's just incredible that now we're going to be on the same show as the champions wrestling in front of close to 80,000 people.
Right. Yeah, Ring of Honor, of course, recently just released a Best of Bryan Danielson DVD that has a match between you and CM Punk, among a lot of other matches. How do you feel about that, you know, releasing, showcasing your career before WWE?
I think that's awesome. And actually, they sent me a link to it and the matches that are on there and everything, and I thought, oh, okay, that'll be kind of like the best match that I've had in my Ring of Honor career and stuff like that. It wasn't. It was just like the best match that I had up until maybe 2005 or something like that.
Yeah.
So they must be planning on releasing another one too, because you know, there's a whole other huge gap of matches, you know, that aren't going to be on there, or that weren't on there, that should be on another one. So I think it's cool, and I think it's important that they capitalize on my success, on CM Punk's success, because without places like Ring of Honor, you need those places us being punker as good as we are because we honed our craft in Ring of Honor in front of those hardcore fans who wouldn't accept anything less than our best efforts. You know,
right.
And you need a place like that for new stars to come from. You know, I look forward to when I watch the Ring of Honor shows to see who's going to be next to come up in WWE. Right now, under developmental contract is Seth Rollins, who wrestled the Ring of Honor's Tyler Black.
Right.
And he did amazing this weekend. He came up and did the live event. He did a dark match on Monday. And everybody was like, wow, this guy's really good. You know, and that's something I knew from the beginning, but he needed that opportunity to showcase it.
Right. Well, I was going to ask you, actually, since you keep talking about giving younger guys a chance, assuming you're still the champion after WrestleMania and with the recent influx of Ring of Honor and other big indie guys in Florida Championship Wrestling, is there anybody on the current WWE roster or in FCW that you'd like to get a shot at your title?
Yeah, I mean, and see, it's funny because I talk about giving young guys opportunities, but I'm still deep down, there's still guys that I'm fans of, you know what I mean? As far as like, these were guys that when I was growing up, I watched and thought were amazing, you know, like I would love to wrestle. I would love to be in a program where I was wrestling Chris Jericho for the World Heavyweight Championship. You know, that doesn't seem likely, but it would be so much fun. I would love to be able to wrestle The Undertaker. Because, I mean, The Undertaker debuted on WWE TV when I was like 10 years old. You know what I mean? Like being able to wrestle him for the World Heavyweight Championship would be awesome. You know, and guys like Triple H and all that kind of stuff, all of that would be amazing. But I would love for Seth Rollins, for Dean Ambrose, who wrestled on the Indies, and John Moxley, Antonio Cesaro, who was in Ring of Honor's Claudio Castagnoli. I would love for those guys to come up shortly after WrestleMania and give them opportunities for the World Heavyweight Championship and for people to see what those guys can do because they're really incredible.
Right. Yeah, and of course, Chris Hero, now known as Cassius Ohno, seems to have made a nice debut in FCW recently, too.
Yeah, I haven't seen his debut, but I can't wait to see it. I'm going to try to find it on YouTube.
Yeah, I haven't watched it, but I've read a lot about it. But, anyway, well, that's all I've got for you, I guess. But I'm looking forward to Raw here in Atlanta, and I think I'm going to actually make the trip down to Miami for WrestleMania, too.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I appreciate you taking the time to do the interview.
Yep, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling
at the Academy Theater in Avondale State.
We're also at the Masquerade every month or so.
Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Champions of Wrestling.
And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
My heart is crying, crying. Lonely teardrops. My pillow never dried. Lonely teardrops. Come.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrestling. Mary Les Thatcher, along with me, Mike Sempervivi. And, you know, I do want to mention a great interview by Jonathan Williams talking to Daniel Bryan. He's got a couple other interviews that are going to be airing on this show, upcoming, leading into WrestleMania. And I think we may have a surprise for you next week, but our guest as well next week is going to be Eddie Edwards, so that's going to be nice to have him on. And for those who didn't get a chance to see the website this week and only heard the show last week, and that's talking about Mike Mondo coming on, you know, go figure, he decided to take the opportunity to work and make some money in his company that he works for, Ohio Valley, and not upset Danny Davis. And you know what, that's probably a more of a wise move. But I do want to thank Kevin Kelly for coming on earlier on, too. And, Les, any thoughts before we go old school here and talk about managers?
I got disconnected before Kevin left, and I was hoping to say, you know, say something kind to Kevin, but so brutal Bob, I know you're listening. Email Kevin and say I'm sorry. I don't know how we got disconnected, but anyway, by the time I came back on, you were already in the commercial, and anyway. And you asked, and then I got in trance with Jackie Wilson and Lonely Teardrops. Love that man. He kicks ass, boy. You know who Jackie Wilson is, Mike?
Just really in name only and hearing songs like that, but don't know anything about him.
Well, okay, that was a song that just brought us into this segment. That's, I didn't know if you knew that or not, but yeah,
yeah.
Love Jackie Wilson, great. Anyway, you asked me a question. What was it?
Well, actually, before we start going old school here and talking about managers, any thoughts on Daniel Bryan and what we just heard and just how he's doing leading into Mania?
No, actually, I couldn't hear it very well, so I turned the TV on and caught the first performer of the top 10 on Idol. Tonight's Billy Joel songbook, so I'm sorry. No, honestly, it was breaking up on me.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully
we'll
be doing that for everybody else.
I hope not either. But I just, you know, I couldn't hear it well, and I thought, I'm not going to sit here and drive myself crazy with this. Trying,
yeah,
you know, because
we're going to have to fire the producer.
I'm a big Bryan Danielson fan, and I kind of like Daniel Bryan a little bit, too. With him, he was more pure when he was Bryan Danielson, and now he's got that showy the whole. I don't know. It's getting over, but it's you know, I just like to watch him do more of the stuff that you know, he did with Nigel and things like that. I'm just, you know, it's diluted it with the show business thing. I'm happy for him. The kid's worked hard, and he's got a spot, you know, and I really wish him well, and I hope he does well with it, honestly.
The we want to go old school here and give it a little bit of time. We teased it last week, and you know, another reason to talk about it is because Mike Mooneyham on his Facebook put up earlier on, I guess it was last week, the anniversary, 2-year anniversary of the death of Gary Hart, and just the topic of managers, which I don't think we've really talked about much on this show here and there, and certainly during the talking about the newsletter Hall of Fame, Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame, we've talked about it a little bit. But, you know, my Mount Rushmore of managers, you know, for me in the era I grew up in, Jim Cornette, Bobby Heenan, you know, honestly for me, Gary Hart, even though I'm sure a lot of people listening to this show who worked in certain areas probably don't think much of Gary Hart, and Gary Hart didn't think much of their areas. But even that said, I always liked the different presentation that he had. And like Paul Ellering kind of had that too, where it was just more of a athletic type thing. You know, Jim Cornette would bounce around, Bobby Heenan with the digs and the shiny jacket and the heavy wrap. I mean, he had his role, and Gary Hart was always just unique to me, and I always liked him. But that fourth guy, I always have I can never put a fourth manager up anywhere, because I love J.J. Dillon. When I go back and look at things on YouTube and old DVDs and things like that, and I hear Wild Red Berry cut a promo about what his guy's going to do to Bruno Sammartino, and Mike Mooneyham mentioned Homer Odell. I did really have not got too much of a chance to see Cannon and all these guys. I just can't put a fourth guy in there. But Les, when you were growing up and cracking into the business, and you had a chance to see a ton of good managers and work with a ton of good managers and have them around you. If you could do a Rushmore, could you do a Mount Rushmore with four guys?
I don't know if I could do a Mount Rushmore or not, honestly. There's so many, and the good thing, they didn't come off an assembly line. They were all different. J.C. Dykes, who managed the Infernos, who will never make Meltzer's Hall of Fame either, because they only worked the Southeastern territories. They didn't travel all over the world. Frankie Kane and Rocky Smith with J.C. Dykes drew money in the Carolinas. They drew money in the Atlanta office, drew money in Tampa office. I think they worked Nashville office. Anyway, they drew money everywhere. I had the opportunity to work with those guys on several occasions. J.C. was a hell of a manager. Bobby Davis, who managed Buddy Austin, Fritz von Goering. He managed Buddy Rogers, too, for a while. Davis was a hell of a manager. A la Homer, when Mooneyham mentioned Homer. Homer was a character. I mean, Homer was one of a kind, believe me. And, there are a lot of good managers. I guess tonight's Let's Be Critical night. I'd like to strip the goofy costumes off Truth Martini. And if he's going to be the gimmick that he's using, then instead of being the clown act, he should be serious. The Book of Truth, I'm cool with him carrying that. I would dress him in a nice, cleaned-up suit and have him actually be serious. Again, my theme tonight is dummy it down. Ronnie West runs Cole Brothers Circus. He's the front man. I can get you all a job there, probably, if I call Ronnie. That was the thing. What?
Oh, no, I was going to say that the manager, like Truth too often, and managers, the manager gives you the who, what, when, where, why in the interview, and why their man is going to take you out, or what the feud is to settle. They're not there to be bump machines and just, you know, be there, you know, with the gimmick in hand, ready to go type of thing. Well, and that's,
you know, Missy Hyatt and I communicate via email. I'm going to tell you what, regardless of the doofus character that she played in the business, you know, Missy is a very intelligent lady, and it's terms of, I mean, you know, she lived with Eddie Gilbert, and a lot of that psychology rubbed. I mean, she is pretty sharp on psychology and stuff, and she made a comment. The great managers didn't run around the ring like they had somebody dropped, you know, hot sauce in their pants. They sat where they belonged. They got up when it was appropriate. They sat down when it was appropriate. They weren't trying to be a part of the show all the time. And I think that's one of the things I don't like about current managers is they're all over the place, you know. And I don't like seeing the managers bumped all the time, you know, like Del Rio's guy there, Jesus, you know. One of the things that got the managers over, Garrett, whether it was Gary or Hump or Corny or Homer or whoever the hell it was the idea that no one got to them. And then when you finally did get to them, you got a hell of a pop. But the reason they got so much heat, one of the reasons we had to pull J.C. Dykes out of a crowd in a riot in Lumberton, North Carolina, was because that the fans, because when he did create a problem, it was a major problem, and the baby faces never got to him, which pissed the people off even more. I've talked to you about the burn gimmick with Dykes and the Infernos that we did in 67 in Charlotte. That was in September. I never laid a hand on J.C. Dykes till Christmas night in December. It was all verbal and written stuff in the programs. And so we built that heat over a period of time. Too often, you see managers get bumped all the time. There's not a lot of managers in the major companies anymore. But, on the indies, it's like sometimes they're a bump machines, and it's really of no value. You know,
They have no role models.
They don't.
Because at least I mean, like, quite a great example of what you're talking about is, and to put it with guys of today, if somebody's listening, is Jim Cornette. You know, that everybody, if you talk to anybody from the beginning of his career, whether it be Lance Russell or Jerry Lawler or Bill Watts or unless you too, you just wanted to punch him right in the face. He just annoyed you so much, and he hid behind these guys, and he had his mama's money and that whole thing, but you never, the Rock and Roll, they would climb in to try to get him. Maybe they'd get his face in the cake, and that would get people close. But, you know, when he did get him, the Road Warriors, he goes off the scaffold, then you get to add a new dynamic into the mix, like Big Bubba Rogers, where it's just so simple. And like you say it every week, and like you're driving home today, it's just very simple. How do you get John Cena over to guys? You have him punch somebody in the face. You know, Magnum TA was, you know, somebody from, you know, my youth where, you know, little kids looked up to him. He was the coolest thing. The women wanted to lay their hands on him, and guys wanted to be him. And to see him beat people up, and it's not that difficult. The same thing with managers, that obviously WWE has got the mindlessness of this, and Bob Evans is doing a good job with Mike Bennett, obviously, in Ring of Honor. You know, it's just too bad these guys don't have the role models, and you do have to rely on to watch the Cornettes and the Heenans and those types of people. Saul Weinroff, we've talked about, too, when it's come to the Von Brauners and the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Was he, you know, obviously you're the guy to ask on this one. Other guys that he managed, because it's a package deal for those people wondering, as far as them going into the Hall of Fame, it would be all three of them together. What can you say a little bit about his legacy, too? Because that's a team, when you look at, the only thing to me they have going against them is, quote-unquote, they weren't super world travelers or whatever, but they certainly seem like they are on the very short list. And he's one of the reasons why.
The Von Brauners?
Yeah.
They got around. I thought, you know, they worked Nashville. They worked a lot of territories, I think.
Well, that's, at least I think Von Brauners was four.
Yeah, the unique thing, the thing that I guess it goes unspoken because the politically correct, you don't talk about it. But this was a Jewish man managing Nazis.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a, you know, and back in the 60s, there was still, you know, I think we overdid the German thing way too long, but, you know, it was But I back in the 60s, when they were at the height of their, you know, popularity, or at the height of everybody's hate list, whatever you want to call it, you know, that was, I mean, it was like, this Jewish guy, you know, is managing Nazis. That's, you know, how can that be? And that created, you know, I think some of the heat too. But now, see, Saul was never, I mean, gosh, I don't, you know, I'm trying to think if I ever saw Saul take a bump. Because Saul wasn't a young man. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't as young like Cornette or Heenan or anybody like that, right?
Yeah.
Saul wasn't ancient, but, you know, he was, you know, he had some age on him and wasn't an athletic guy at all. But, you know, that's Ken Ramey, we haven't talked about. Dr. Ken.
Dr. Ken, yeah.
With the interns. Yeah. Ken was a hell of a manager, too. There were a lot of good managers. But
down Florida, too, when you were down in Florida. When you were down in Florida, like the Rock Hunters, because, you know, we haven't really talked about that. Them really either as far as, you know, when you were down there, who were the big managers there? And you know, because that's, Florida's not really known for managers. I mean, like, obviously Gary Hart and things like that. And Hunker,
well, I'm trying to think.
I think
the two times I was in Florida, 67 and 71, I don't know that there were any managers. You got me thinking about it.
Huh.
And I don't remember. I don't remember there being any managers down there at the time. Wait a minute. No. I was thinking of the Monroes, Sputnik and Rocket, but they didn't have a manager either down there. Well, I don't know if Jimmy Garvin managed Terry and Ronnie down there or not. I don't. Now, he was not when I was there. He didn't, but I can't swear that he never did at all.
Well, you know what? Now that you say that, at least whenever I do remember reading that when he did manage them, but I'm not sure when that would have been.
Yeah, I don't know of course, in 67 he wasn't old enough to manage anybody, but 71 when I was there, he wasn't in 67. I don't know how old Jimmy was, but he wasn't in the business at the time. I'll tell you somebody, and when I brought this name up, it got me thinking about something else in terms of managers. Ernie Roth, who managed
Grand
Armstrong K, or is the Grand Wizard. Yeah, then I got to thinking, okay, Ernie was a brilliant mind for the business. Of course, Corny booked, Gary booked. But I often wonder if Ernie had lived, because he and Vince Jr. were tight. And I often wonder, had Ernie have lived, how different things in WWF/WWE might have been. What kind of influence he would have had over Jr. Because I know they were close friends. And in fact, when Bob Harmon worked close with Vince when Vince was up in New England, you know, before he took over the whole company from his dad. And in fact, Ernie and Bob had a lot to do with New England, I think, for Vince Sr. as well. I mean, you know, taking care of towns and stuff up there. But Ernie had a hell of a mind for the business. And I just got to thinking, well, you know, and the three managers I just talked about ended up being bookers. So it wasn't a mindless thing, you know, and I think that's in some of the indies. I look at some of the valets and some of the managers, and I think, okay, this is kind of like on the knothole on the little league team. The guy that's the worst player, you put him in right field because there's not a lot of left-handed hitters.
But, hey, Les, I wanted to jump in and tell a story real quick about something that happened down in Florida one time. I don't know if you were aware of it or not, but Humperdinck was down there, and I can't remember exactly who he was managing at the time, but one of the funniest things ever off of stipulation, he ends up losing a Loser Leaves Town match, or maybe his charge did or whatever, but he comes back the next week on TV, and Gordon Soley, of course, you know, he's doing the Gordon Soley shtick, you know, wait a minute, you're not supposed to be here. You lost a Loser Leaves Town match, you know, setting it up for anybody that maybe wasn't paying attention. And then, of course, Humperdinck pulls out of his coat pocket a train ticket that, that was stamped that shows that he left town. I just always thought that was one of the funniest things of a stipulation I'd ever seen.
I never heard that one. Never heard
he
and maybe
left
you shouldn't have brought
yeah.
up. It'll be used on every indie show that's listened to this.
Absolutely.
By this time next week. No. But he did leave town, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what the ticket said, yeah. Didn't say anything about him, you know,
okay.
not being able to come back. Said he had to leave town.
Oh, that is that. Okay. All righty.
Do you remember what it's like to actually be back
Billy,
on the air?
Didn't Billy Spears manage for a while?
I believe he did. I believe he might have even done it for a while.
Yeah, I think so.
But Rich, you love Sonny King, correct?
I think he.
I'm sorry, what's that, Mike?
You love Sonny King, correct?
Oh, Sonny King rocked. Yeah, Sonny King was, to me, one of the most underrated guys ever. My favorite manager, though, was always Gary Hart. I just thought Gary Hart played the role just perfectly. And I love Dillon, J.J. Dillon. And, I don't know. See, there's a lot of guys that I missed. That Les has mentioned that, you know, I've done a lot of research on these guys, but, you know, having seen them firsthand, I was born probably a decade too late. But at least from my era, Gary Hart and J.J. Dillon were the guys. And Rock Gunner.
Yeah, Bunk Harris managed for a while. Two-Ton Harris managed.
Right.
So did Crybaby Cannon. He managed.
You know what? I
Cannon managed the Kangaroos.
Right. Right.
Who?
Ma Bass. You know, Jim Ross did a story on WWE 24/7, and I wish that there was audio or video out there somewhere, some way of the exploits of Ma Bass, who he just made sound like was a remarkably, incredibly entertaining character.
I never saw her, but I've always heard that, yeah, she did a hell of a job for them. I'm trying to think, Jack Donovan. Who was Jack Donovan's wife? She managed for a while.
Oh, God.
She wrestled. She was a wrestler, too, but I can't think of her name. Save my life.
Mm.
But anyway, yeah. Yeah, Jack's wife managed for a while, too. But a lot of good managers back then. But like I say, the allure or the way they built heat was that you never got to them, right? And they weren't bump machines, and they weren't supposed to be. That was one of the things, there was a kid that broke in with me. Rock Guffman, who managed for me, probably one of the best independent managers. We did a thing with him at the Grand Victoria Casino with Corny, and Jim commented. Actually, GQ Masters, who was also a manager for me, and helped me start the company. They did a shtick with Corny at the Grand Victoria, and Jimmy was impressed. I mean, with both of them, but. Guffman could work at a top level, given the opportunity. But anyway, I had another kid that managed, and I won't mention his name because I don't want to burn him, but I went to a show. This was after I'd left the company, and he had a faction, and he went out in that faction, and his faction was in three different matches, and he got his ass bumped in all three, and I thought, what the hell are you doing? Oh, you know, I have fun. I said, well, that's cool, but you have no heat. You maybe have fun, but any opportunity to get any kind of heat is over because, you know, he was just out there taking bumps. But, I mean, that's one of the problems, I think, with managers today, too, is they're gotten to too quickly, too often. And so, again, you know, it comes back to everything's overdone, and it takes the edge off, you know, what is fresh is actually good psychology and solid wrestling. That's what is that they're doing? That's called wrestling. Oh, wow. That's really
heaven
cool.
Heaven forbid. As you got about a minute, a little less than a minute to go here, I do want to mention tomorrow night, Peach State Pandemonium with those guys. Tomorrow night, you're going to be talking about the head-to-head card comparisons for GCW against All South during the war, which for someone like me who's a geek for these sorts of things, I'm going to be listening into to that one. And, you know, what do you got coming up here this week?
Who, me?
Yes, sir.
I think we're doing two shows on Observer Figure Four. I think we're doing our regular show, and then Saturday night we're taping with JJ. I'm not sure when that'll be put up. And then today I did a thing with Mike Johnson on Insider. Mostly we talked about developmental. We also talked about Chris Candido, which his birthday was just—I forget exactly which day—but Mike had brought up to me it was Candido's birthday, and we talked about Chris and like you know, I'm working on a few different dates. I'm going to I may have something coming up in the works. I won't even mention now. Somebody called me today on another deal, but I won't bring it up until I'm sure there's something about it. But you know, going to Vegas next month for CAC. More to the point, to meet with a gentleman from California who's starting a promotion out there. His target date is the first of, of next year. And, and it'll be in Charlotte the 2nd through the 5th of August at the NWA Legends Convention. And Greg hasn't done any announcements yet, but I think there's going to be a couple of things going on there that have never been done in past years at all. So at least a couple of things we talked about, I won't mention it until he's made it official, if in fact he does. But so anyway, and of course I am open for bookings. You can get me at less@epwt.com. And I haunt houses too as a sideline.
You need to haunt Alvarez's for me. And and we'll be doing Wrestling Observer Live again this Sunday, 6 to 8. Go to WrestlingObserver.com for all that. And the Adam Mike Big Audio Nightmare, the newest one from last Sunday, is up now. We'll be doing another one again here real soon, too, just kind of talking about the situation in Japan. We've missed the last couple of big title matches that have taken place. We talk about those. And obviously a little bit about A-Train, Matt Bloom coming back into WWE as well. So if you want to follow me, at SemperVivi, if you're on Twitter, at RingsideRap, and of course go to RingsideRap.com every day for all the news and notes throughout the day. And again, Beach Day Pandemonium is going to be great tomorrow night. And Jonathan Williams, the interviews that we got coming up next week, courtesy of him. So I guess we will see you all again next week.
For listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.